Happy New Year, and welcome to this special edition of the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are still in Season 3, the 16th episode, the 42nd overall, the Dark Phoenix Saga Part 4, the Fate of the Phoenix, the end of the Dark Phoenix Saga.
Why is this a special edition?
Well, because we're recording this a little later than we normally do. And it's the first one of the new year.
Okay.
So aren't we all excited?
Yeah.
Yes, we are very excited. I just want to also thank all our fans. They sent us a lot of nice New Year's messages last night. That was very sweet of them to do. So we're very excited to do this on our last day off before we go back to work.
Boo.
Before we trudge back to work.
Boo.
Yes. So this is the last entry in the Dark Phoenix Saga. This is actually a really fun and exciting episode.
Yeah.
You know, I hadn't really remembered the specifics of the animated series episode here. I mean, I obviously remember it, but and I also remember the comic book, so it's all, like, twisted up in my mind. Mm-hmm. But to see it again here is a pretty satisfying conclusion, I thought.
Yeah, a large portion is dedicated to a super fight we'll get into.
Yeah, it's a pretty exciting,
the
like,
emotions
animation,
are really cranked up to 10.
Yes, they are.
And it's a satisfying completion of a really cool story arc. So.
Yeah. All right, so let's dive right into it. So it opens where, well, where we left off last time was Jean and the professor, or the Phoenix and the professor, had some kind of psychic battle, and the professor did his patented tying up a subconscious entity in a concrete wall maneuver that he's so prone to do, like where he goes into your mind. If there's like some split personality, he just covers it in like some kind of like gooey rock paste. And so that's where we left off last time.
Concrete, so, right?
Well, yeah, but it's like, it's always like, you
mental
know,
concrete.
Yeah, mental concrete that's like he's really smooshing around.
Uh-huh.
It's like superheated. So that's where we left off the last one. It seemed that Jean was saved, that they restored Jean as the dominant personality, although Dark Phoenix was still locked up in there somewhere. But like, and right at the last minute, though, the Shi'ar arrive and they're like, no, we must destroy Jean Grey to make sure the Phoenix never does this again.
Right.
And so that was the cliffhanger. And now we are in this episode, and right away, Professor X reads Lalandra's mind and discovers an ancient Shi'ar loophole that allows him to maybe save Jean's life.
Mm-hmm.
And that loophole is a challenge to a duel of honor. He says it in some like wonky fake Shi'ar language. I didn't bother writing down, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He says, Karin Alamar, or something.
Something.
Yeah, something stupid like that. But anyway... And as Empress, Lalandra is forced to accept this challenge, even though she thinks it's stupid and the entire universe is in the balance here.
Mm-hmm.
So Lalandra makes this case. She says, the Phoenix will consume galaxies. If we don't stop her, she'll end all of creation.
It's pretty dramatic, actually, because, you know, she's saying, like, oh, well, the Phoenix had to consume one solar system to feed or whatever before, but like once she gets used to that, she's just gonna want more and more and more.
Right. And I thought it was kind of funny that this is all being left to the Shi'ar to take care of. Now the Shi'ar, they're like powerful space aliens.
Yeah.
But they're just, you know, they're nothing really special. They're just like humanoids like any other alien race.
But they feel responsible for the Phoenix, right? Because it
was... it's tied in with the crystal.
It came from the Emkron crystal at the beginning of this Phoenix story, so...
That's true.
I think they're, like, guardians of the Phoenix in the same way that the Phoenix is the guardian of...
all creation.
Everything,
So, I mean, that's all true. But we were just reading some, like, badass new Silver Surfer comics. I believe they're written by the combination of Slott and Allred. I don't know what their first names are because we just bought it when we were on vacation. And, like, the Silver Surfer universe reminds you that there's many, like, super powerful cosmic beings out there, more powerful than the Shi'ar.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, the Silver Surfer's one, Galactus, Nightmare, Eternity, the Never Queen. Like, all these, like, super insanely, like, ultra extra-dimensional powerful beings that might, like... be able to tangle with the Phoenix.
They really make Earth and all of its superheroes seem minute.
Yeah, and it's like...
insignificant.
Yeah, it seems like when if a cosmic entity like the Phoenix goes out of control, then it shouldn't fall to the a piddling galactic civilization like the Shi'ar to deal with it. It might, like, be time for the Silver Surfer and company to step into action. Yeah. I mean, that goes back to the comics, too. It's like, why are the X-Men dealing with this? I always wondered, like, it seems like the Phoenix, you know, needs greater treatment here.
Right. Well, Lilandra feels responsible, though. I'm willing to accept that.
Yeah, I'm willing to accept, too. I'm just saying we've read that Silver Surfer comic, and it's really cool. And everyone should check it out. So that's what's going on. So they all agree to a duel. The X-Men get transported onto Lilandra's starship there. Beast is quite surprised by it, as is Storm. And then, like, there's some back deal negotiating about the duel, where Lilandra goes and consults with the head of the Kree and Skrull empires, who historically hate each other. But here they agree to sort of cooperate and allow this duel to happen, even though everyone kind of, like, admits to each other, like, we'll allow the duel to take place, but the Phoenix must be destroyed no matter what happens, no matter what the outcome. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the stacks really stacked against the X-Men there. The decks are stacked against the X-Men. So it looks like a fairly hopeless cause. And this is all, like, pretty close to the comic, you know? Like, this similar thing happens in the comic book, too. And then, like, even this next sequence where the X-Men all, like, start, like, practicing for this fight they're going to have. Mm-hmm. They go into, like, training mode, and they all individually sort of express their doubts to each other about what, you know, if they're on the right side of history here. And, you know, Storm has doubts. Beast has doubts. I like that a rare mention of Storm's real name, where Beast addresses her as Aurora. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen enough on this show.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I don't know. Storm's a really awesome nickname to have, but still, Aurora is also a really beautiful name.
Really cool name, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, Gambit and Wolverine have doubt. Even Wolverine expresses a little bit of doubt, despite his unrequited love for Jean Grey.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's just, like, kind of like a long preamble to the main event. Professor X and Lilandra are communicating in their psychic love world that's normally so beautiful. But when the second he tries to ask Lilandra for help in this situation, she feels betrayed. And their bond that is deeper than love is immediately called into question. And she gets pissed at Charles. And that's, like, a small minor subplot of this episode that... There's a growing rift between Charles and Lilandra here,
mm-hmm.
because of her duties as Empress.
It just seems so weird because we don't see any evidence of them really, like, maintaining their relationship. Like, they don't really see each other or communicate or, like...
Yeah. I think in the comics, Professor X goes on a very long sabbatical to spend time with Lilandra.
That's cool.
And that leads to a lot of... And that might have happened right after this Dark Phoenix saga in the comics. I'm not sure when the timeline actually is, but he disappears for a long-ass time.
Oh, so maybe that's going to happen...
Not in this show.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
I didn't remember.
Right. You have to remember the ending.
I mean, that would be good.
Yeah. Yeah, so no. Yeah, in the comics, their relationship's a little bit more... has a little more substance to it, but in this show, they only talk about it.
Yeah, which, you know... I don't feel like this is such a bad thing, necessarily. Love doesn't mean that you always agree with each other, right?
No, absolutely, yeah. So, it's part of, you know, true love as well.
Right.
Yeah.
She's an empress. She's got, like...
No, she's a magistrix.
Right, yes. Well, it's she's referred to interchangeably
right,
between
yes.
those two.
I just think, is magistrix a real word?
I don't think
so. I don't want to look it up, but I'm just going to pretend it is. But I like the suffix of trix.
Uh-huh.
Because the only other suffix I know that is tricks is dominatrix.
What? Matrix.
Oh, right. Matrix, too. So a dominatrix is like you're dominating the matrix we all live in?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm just trying to think about like, the real definition of the
word.
Well,
no. I think the word is supposed to come from magistrate.
No, that's where they get the first part.
Yeah.
Majesty.
Yeah.
But then why are you adding a tricks at the end?
Make it spacey and cool.
I thought they were just for kids, though.
What's for kids?
Tricks.
Ha.
You don't like that joke. Sonia, not the biggest fan of my humor. write that down in the record. Meanwhile, though, you know, and Cyclops, too, also has doubts if he's doing the right thing. And he really has the bond deeper than love here. We talked about that in previous episodes.
Yeah.
But, like, Cyclops is really in love with Jean Grey. And that's good to see in this show. That, you know, in the movies, they kind of, like, didn't do a good job. They really shortchanged the relationship between Cyclops and Jean, and they made it more about Wolverine and Jean in a weird way, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's Cyclops and Jean are meant to be together, well, up to a certain point when she dies, like, many times, and he has to move on many times. But then Jean surprises Scott, and this is just like in the comics, she's wearing her, what she describes as her original X-Men uniform.
Right.
Which, you know, it's not really her original X-Men uniform.
No, it's just one of the older incarnations.
Right, yeah. The original one is that, like, blue and yellow number that's, like, from head to toe and covers up, like, the top part of her head like Batman.
Yeah.
And her red ponytail sticks out.
Yeah.
This one's, like, her short green Star Trek, classic Star Trek era mini dress.
Yeah, this lime is the green, 60s era one.
Right, with yellow, like, rubber gloves.
And she's got, like, a butterfly-shaped mask over her face.
Yeah.
Which is a funny, like, throwback, because none of the X-Men really wear masks now, unless it's for a practical purpose.
Right, yeah.
Well, actually, Wolverine, that's not true, yeah.
He's Wolverine got one. Does. But, yeah, you're right. And it's just, it's kind of, like, funny because, you know, thinking about the history of the comics, when Jean emerges as Phoenix... the first time,
yeah.
And she's in the green and yellow outfit,
yeah.
Is the idea that she basically rearranged the, and this is her Marvel, her original Marvel Girl outfit, did she rearrange the Marvel Girl outfit from the, that color scheme, or is it just a coincidence?
Who knows?
We'll never know. So, we get to see Jean in her classic Marvel Girl outfit, which is kind of weird for them to introduce,
yeah.
Because we've only known Jean in her weird, like, Jim Lee era beige and navy blue skin tight outfit that's really unattractive.
Yeah.
So we don't know and this is something that's going to happen a little more in season 3, as we'll see, is that they hint at like a prehistory of the X-Men they never show.
But I like that.
Oh yeah, I like it too.
You know,
oh,
I like that they talk about it even, because yeah. It's like a little bit of a nod.
And I think actually they contradict themselves later, because I think they do show the X-Men at some point. We're going to see in the Iceman episode in their blue and yellow original outfits.
Yeah.
So that, you know.
It's just funny. Like, almost makes it, like, brings it into the real world a little bit more, you know. Like,
right.
Hey, remember when I used to wear this outfit? Like,
right. Yeah. Well, and what it does is it shows that this show, the writers and producers are showing that the show is, it's always going to be a take on the comics.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a best of. So they don't have to, like, adhere to their own continuity. They're just pulling from the comics in satisfying ways for, you know, artistic purposes, and that's mm-hmm. awesome. You
yeah.
know, that's why the show, I think, is unique and great. You know, it's like they just do whatever they want, and the way they do it, it's not, like, an insult to the fans. It's kind of satisfying in its own way.
Yeah.
Because I think the reason for that is because, like, up to this point, there was no serious take on the Marvel Universe, anything, including Spider-Man.
Right.
Although the new Spider-Man show took off a little bit after this one. But still, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This is all the Marvel you were going to get at that point. And you're, you know, happy to see any facet of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, Jean's in her Marvel Girl uniform. And then she also has doubts, too. So, this is the whole doubts section of the episode. And her doubts manifest where she, like, not only just tells Scott, like, listen, I'm... the Dark Phoenix is in me and I can destroy the world. She projects a psychic link into his brain and shows him what the end of the world is going to look like.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nightmarish. She shows, like, Paris being destroyed, New York, like, the Taj Mahal. and we also get that classic real-world image of fire engulfing our
yeah.
cartoon imagery.
So funny.
Yeah. I like that touch as well. Because that shows kids this is, like, really dangerous.
Yeah.
It's not just, like, animated fire. It's, like, actual dangerous fire. Right. What happens next? And then Lilandra says, all right, we're going to fight now. You're going to fight my Shi'ar guard, which we've seen in previous episodes. Mm-hmm. And they're going to fight in the uncharted blue area of Earth's moon.
Yes. Is this the dark side of the moon, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot going on the moon in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
The Inhumans reside there, and then in... I don't think this has anything to do with the Inhumans. It might. Comic nerd fans, please correct me in the Facebook group. But, you know, we see that it's like Beast comments that, oh, the moon was once inhabited. And Storm also, like, remarks, it has atmosphere and we can breathe. And that's, I guess, also to establish that her powers work on the moon. But still, it's like, and then we see on the uncharted blue section that there's, like, ancient moon people monuments and things.
Ruins, yeah.
Yeah, ruins, so... you know, a pretty cool, like, sci-fi lore going on here. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I don't know if it's connected to the Inhumans or not, but just some magical, like, nonsense happening, much like the Savage Land in the South Pole, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, was this from a time when the dark side of the moon was not explored in real life?
Well, I mean, the dark side of the moon has always been, like, a silly science fiction concept, too, in any, you know, medium. I wouldn't be surprised if this is the dark side of the moon and that, you know, this is just, like, another sci-fi reference to that.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so they're on the... I don't know what makes this section the blue area, but, all right, nonetheless. So then we head up into the main... event here. It's the Shi'ar Guard versus the X-Men yet again, but this time on the moon, and it's a pretty, like, long and vicious fight. You know, they're all, like, blasting each other and blowing things up, and it's kind of like an archaeologist's, a future space archaeologist's worst nightmare, because the X-Men are just knocking over all these, like, ancient moon monuments.
Yeah, really.
That, you know, probably have untold wonders and things.
Yeah.
And they're just turning it
smashing
into...
smashing them.
Yeah. It's like, why do you guys have to fight in a historic zone? Couldn't you pick some other, like, more uninhabited part of the moon? It's pretty barren. Like, I'm sure the Shi'ar have technology to create, like, some kind of atmosphere there so that you could fight on it. Or just fight in some, like, big, dumb arena.
Yeah.
So, but whatever. So they're just, you know, there's no time to worry about the destruction of ancient moon monuments. And, you know, the X-Men, they're getting all their one-liners in as they're fighting all these intriguing fights. I don't remember all the Shi'ar Guard characters' names, just a few, like, Gladiator and Starbolt. And
I thought it was funny, though, at, like, the beginning of the fight, Cyclops has some line. He's like, now remember the plan. We split up into groups, yeah. and what is it? Like, wear them down one by one or yeah. something. And I was like, isn't that always your plan? Like, you've never had to express that out loud before. That's just what you guys do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Cyclops is the master tactician of the team.
But he only has one tactic, it seems.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, normally the X-Men, you know, this is actually a real dangerous fight for the X-Men.
Yeah.
So normally they just, like, wipe out wimps like the Blob and Avalanche. And, you know, but here it's like they have to be on their toes a bit more. You know, this show, as good as this show's characterization of Magneto is, they didn't do it enough justice because he's very quickly turned into, like, borderline good guy after the end of the first season. So they never, like, really have to fight Magneto in a traditional way again, and he's their ultimate foe. So it's like we don't see them, like, go against Magneto that much in the show. Like, he'll come back a few times later, but even still, it's like in, like, a weird, like, shaky ground.
Yeah, but I think that's in the surface of them, like, introducing more of the villains from, like, throughout the comic book history.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah, and the show, like, even though the show is serialized, it's not serialized with a great, like, overarching cohesive narrative. Like, I feel like if this show had, like, a greater cohesive narrative, the subplot of Magneto versus the X-Men would be bigger.
I actually don't mind that, and I think that, like, the movies really
honed in on that. Yeah,
like,
the movies,
whole.
Like, yeah, they ground it to death.
Yeah, exactly, and
they
everyone's...
did it to death.
I mean, yeah, it's a great relationship, right. And Magneto's a very complex character with a great history. That's all true, but I kind of appreciate that this show has a little bit more of, like, a sampling, so you can... You get a greater idea of the universe.
It's the great
of villains.
It's the great X-Men sampler.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope that when, and I still feel like even in the movies we see Magneto a lot, his role is always kind of stupid and, like, shoehorned in a way.
Uh-huh.
He's not done. The comic book Magneto is still the best Magneto in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I hope that when Disney reacquires the X-Men, that they redo the Magneto thing better, because he's such a great villain. And he, like, at his worst villainy, he's so vicious and so deadly to the X-Men.
That's true, but they've shown that. Like, I don't... I actually hope that, like, in the future movies, they don't, like, keep harping on him. I think
they haven't done him right. This is my complaint. And I get what you're saying, right? They've shown him too much.
Yeah.
But, like, my problem with it is, like, he starts off as Ian McKellen, so he's a really old man.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first movie, he's actually a really awesome threat, right?
Yeah.
And the second movie, he's also a really good threat, although kind of like a side threat.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use him too much beyond that. So he gets way overused, Ian McKellen or Michael Fassbender, take your pick. But still, it's like, it's not like prime Magneto. Like, it's that's old man Magneto, and then it's young man Magneto.
Right.
And it's not, like, the, like, silver-haired, muscular, like, snarling Magneto mm-hmm. that is, like, in the prime of his villainy.
Right.
It's always, they're always showing him at, like, one extreme end of his life or the other. And, like, it's cool, but it's been done too much. It's like, I want, like, prime, like, you know, 45-year-old Magneto with white hair that, like, can't be reasoned with yet. Kind of thing. I want like a much more satisfying arc of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, and that's why it's, you know, despite the evilness of the corporatization of all this Disney Fox thing, it's like the most satisfying thing we're going to get. We're going to get these villains back. We're going to get Magneto. We're going to get like Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
We're going to get these like great villains that exist in X-Men and Fantastic Four that they haven't been able to use yet in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's exciting to me.
I'd be okay with seeing that, but I want like 10 other movies to happen first, and then they return to Magneto. And
that's, yeah, I'm fine with that.
You know what I mean?
I'm totally fine with that. But like,
if we're going to be picky, if we're just ordering off the X-Men menu, you know?
Yeah, if we're going to see Magneto, my only point about Magneto is if we're going to see him, I want it to be like classic evil Magneto from the comics.
I get that.
Not reformed Magneto, not like the Magneto that trains the X-Men in the X-Mansion when Professor X disappears. You know what I mean? Not like...
Yeah, yeah.
Like Holocaust survivor Magneto. Like,
you want peak Magneto.
Yeah, I want peak, like, demented Magneto.
Got it. Well...
I want the Magneto that rips out Wolverine's adamantium skeleton in a painful manner.
Right.
Yeah.
Gruesome.
Yes, very gruesome.
For this episode, though, I really like the Shi'ar as an adversary for the X-Men, though, because they are, like, really evenly matched.
Yeah, yeah. And they're the space X-Men.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah, no, they're an excellent adversary. The X-Men are, like, pretty much, like, defeated as this fight carries on.
Yeah.
There's a great... I love the fight between Rogue and Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
She has a ridiculous line about... When she's... Actually, before that, she's fighting Starbolt. And she's like, "You're as hot as a swamp bug on a hot skillet." It's really stupid.
Yeah. It's a bad one.
She never has a stupid southern expression that probably doesn't exist.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I don't know. I don't know how true her southern drawlisms are. But, you like that catchphrase I just made, Southern drawlisms?
Nope.
Okay, good. So, but then she's fighting Gladiator, and, like, she gets a really cool moment where she sort of knocks him around and, you know, tussles her hair a bit.
Yeah.
And that just makes me think they also need to get Rogue done correctly in the movies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, no offense to Anna Paquin. Like, she's been in other stuff that's been good, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think she was the right choice for Rogue, honestly.
It's not even... right. She's not the right choice, and it's also not the right characterization.
Yeah.
They picked, like, the wimpy Captain or Ms. Marvel Rogue that doesn't have super strength and flying.
Right.
And, right, and Anna Paquin's too...
About
yeah,
this.
We did. Yeah, yeah. In the X-Men movie review.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I forgot for a minute.
No, it's
all came flooding back.
Not everyone probably heard our discussion on movie Rogue, so we can mention again. So, you know, like, we both thought that Anna Paquin was too wimpy and mousy for Rogue. We need, like, a bombshell, like, superhero in the classic Rogue outfit that we really love here.
Again, it's like because of the timeline, though. It's because it's teenage Rogue, and like what I really want to see is like
22-year-old Rogue.
Yeah, whatever she is in this series,
with like big
mid-20s Rogue with like a lot of attitude and like self-confidence.
Yeah, yeah, right. Flying around, punching things, friends with Storm, the whole deal.
Yeah,
we need good. She's a great character. She's one of the best, like most powerful female characters in the Marvel universe, mm-hmm. and it's just a shame.
Yeah.
You know. It's like, I don't even know what the current deal with Rogue in the comics is. Like, she's lost those powers and regained other ones, and she's got, like, a whole bunch of wacky new powers. But whatever. I think to everyone that knows Rogue, this is the Rogue they know.
Right.
And this is where we should start from if we're going to put her in new Marvel movies, right? Okay. So,
okay, that's settled.
Well, anyway, Rogue gets her butt kicked by Gladiator in the end. He kind of drags her out of some rubble. And then... You know, the X-Men are kind of getting defeated. Wolverine gets zapped by the magic cape lady that shoots her cape lightning at him. And, you know, Storm and Gambit are being beaten around. And then it's up to Cyclops and Jean. They're kind of the last two heroes left. And Cyclops has a lot of crazy monologues in this episode.
Yeah.
He's feeling very emotional. So, I mean, it's just... They're borderline ridiculous, but they're very true to the character. He's so intense. So he grabs Jean right before they fight, and he says... Jean, there's so much I feel, so much I haven't done, so much I want to say to you. And Jean has like a really corny response to that. She says, with me, it's the thoughts that count. And your thoughts, like you, are beautiful.
And then they kiss.
And then they kiss, yeah.
And then they go fight.
Yeah. Gene's really into Scott, too. You know, he's a handsome hunk
for her. Yeah, well, they're in love, you know.
Yeah, they're in love. Yeah.
And they're teamed up on this battlefield.
Yeah, this battlefield of love.
The two of them have to, go out there holding hands and start fighting.
So they start fighting, and then, you know, they're kind of getting beat themselves, but Gene, you know, she can't really be beat because the Phoenix inside of her. So when she's getting defeated, the Phoenix wakes up and takes over. And that's when things start going haywire. She's turning evil again. Lilandra initiates Plan Omega, which is to just, like, say, screw this duel. Let's just kill her right now.
Well, like, Lilandra and the Shi'ar are kind of one fair and square. The rest of the X-Men are kind of, like, beaten, you know? Yeah, they're, like, kind of laying around the battlefield, like, semi-conscious. Right.
But the Phoenix is the one that's really won. Like, she can't be beaten.
Right. But I'm just saying,
so the duel's out,
like,
the window.
It's not,
yeah.
Well, no, that's the thing, is, like, the duel is finished, you know? Like, the bet was that if the X-Men are defeated, Lilandra gets to defeat the Phoenix.
Right, yeah.
So, like, it, you know, it's not like she's unfounded.
The X-Men are defeated, but Phoenix is not defeated, though.
Well, the Phoenix was not, like, fighting on the X-Men's side. The Phoenix was, like, dormant.
Right. Yeah, that's fine. So. All right, so Plan Omega is initiated. You know, and Cyclops actually... not Cyclops. Professor X agrees with Lilandra that the Phoenix must be stopped. So he, you know, tells the X-Men to, like, wake up and, like, start fighting the Phoenix, and, you know, Beast blasts her with a gun, and there's other things. Like, Wolverine's about to stab her again, much like X-Men 3 at the end, but he can't do it, like, which makes more sense from a character point of view.
Right.
And Cyclops also can't... Well, actually... Cyclops does what he assumes is a finishing blow on Jean. He, like, blasts a moon mountain, and it crumbles on, crushes her. And he's like, he thinks he killed her. Which is, like, you know, get a clue, Cyclops. She's the Dark Phoenix. Like, stones are not going to crush her.
Right.
And we've also established in this universe that people being buried in rubble has very little effect on people's health.
Yeah, everyone seems to really just
survive,
muscle their way out of there.
Yeah, so Phoenix, no surprise, she blasts out of it. And then there's another great line from Cyclops where he's super intense. Good old Norm Spencer, the voice of Cyclops, really brought it. he says, Jean, fight it! Use the powers of your mind! And I just, like, I'm going to start shouting that at you now whenever you're, like, feeling down in life. I'm just going to say, Sonya, use the powers of your mind!
You know, it might work, right? Don't they say that, like, people that have, like, really serious illnesses... Like, if they believe that they're going to get better, they're, like, scientifically proven to have, like, much better chances of getting better.
You need extreme willpower.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true with anything. If you're battling depression or anxiety, you need to, like, ultimately, whether you do it through meditation or exercise or what have you, you have to, like, summon enormous willpower to... you know, figure out a way to tell your mind to stop, like, tormenting itself. So,
right, yeah. No, I don't even mean just, like, anxiety and depression. Like, don't they have studies of, like, cancer patients
where that's true? Right. Well, yeah. You need to, like, summon, like, all the goodwill you can, the psychic energy to lift your spirits.
Right.
Right.
Because,
you know, your health and your mind are very tied together.
Okay. So that's, like, not a bad sentiment.
I know.
Well,
absolutely
I'll accept
not.
That from you. You can tell me to summon the powers of my mind.
I know. I'm just saying it's funny when Cyclops says it to somebody. It's kind of like that insane Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Whatever his name is. He, like, his motivational video he made a few years ago where he's just screaming at an audience in front of, like, a green screen. He's like, just do it! Whatever you want in life, you have to grab it and just do it! You
know?
Yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah, no, it's totally insane. So it's...
Why did he do that?
Because he's a borderline nut job.
Okay.
But anyway, Jean, you know, sort of regains her consciousness, and she uses the Shi'ar weapons to zap herself, and, Cyclops is, like, you know, very sad about this, obviously, and he says, well, Lilandra, you've won. You've got your justice. The universe is safe. And he's kind of real pissy about it. But, yeah, the universe has been saved. I mean, I'm sorry Jean had to be sacrificed, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you – like, the tone he's taking is kind of funny in that moment. Yeah,
right.
But whatever, you know, the day is saved. Everyone's sad about it. But then the phoenix appears, the firebird.
What not a surprise.
Jean. Yeah, and she explains herself. She's like, sorry, I lost myself a little bit once I discovered what you humans call emotion. I'm all better now. I'm going to go back to being the guardian of creation. Goodbye.
Yeah.
And Cyclops is like, wait a second. Jean's dead. Can't you revive her? And she's like, well, I'm going to need the flame of one of your lives to bring her back to life, but you will die. And they're like, and then
Wolf- and Cyclops like volunteers right away. He's like, take me instead. And yeah. Wolverine's like, get out of the way. Take yeah. me.
It's like, this isn't your game, bub. This is up to me. And it's actually, Wolverine probably could have expressed himself better in that moment. He's like, listen, if they take my life force, I might actually come back to life because I'm kind of invincible myself.
Oh, I thought it was like Wolverine's willing to sacrifice himself because Jean actually like really loves Scott. So like.
Right,
she's
yeah,
going to
yeah.
go on to live a happy life together Absolutely. With Scott, whereas like if Scott sacrificed himself, Jean might never recover from that and like probably no. wouldn't like love Wolverine anyway.
No, that's totally the reason. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Wolverine's trying to be like more of the tragic love hero.
Right.
And yeah, if you can't have Jean romantically, he's going to save her life and let her be happy with Cyclops.
Right.
But I'm saying like there's an argument like beyond that too where like Wolverine might be like, you know, I've got healing factors, so if you suck out my life force, mine might flicker back to normal.
Hmm.
Anyway, but you're right. It's totally about... No, you're right. Yeah, it's totally about being more noble. So they have a fight about, like, who's going to nobly kill themselves for
right.
Jean. And then the Phoenix Force is like, all right, whatever, stop fighting. Actually, all I need is just a little bit of life from each of you, and she'll be fine. She's like, but, you know, your flame will be slightly diminished. So the X-Men have, like, 5 less years of their lives to look forward to. Actually, could we do the math here?
Is it about years of life?
I would say so.
Oh, I thought it would be like their powers or like something.
No, not their powers. It's their life force.
Yeah.
But. So, you know, it's kind of like the reverse of in The Princess Bride when he's put on that machine that kills him.
Yeah.
And there's like, it says like 5 years, 10 years, 100 years,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And he's tortured, you know, nearly to death, but he manages to be okay.
Yeah. It's not the reverse. It's the same, right?
It is, yeah. It's yeah. like take, but that's just taking his life for nothing.
Right.
Here, they're sacrificing a bit of their life for someone else.
Okay.
So it's like maybe, like, how many X-Men are there? Storm, Rogue,
Wolverine, Cyclops, Professor X,
Gambit, 6, yeah. Beast, 7.
Beast, yeah.
So 7. So how many years does Jean need to live a full, healthy life? Like, she's like, let's 50. Say she's at 30 now, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So 50 divided by 7 is what?
Like, you know, 8 or 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 8 or 9 each they have to sacrifice?
Right.
I don't know. I can't do math in my head like this while we're recording. I'm not that smart.
No, 7 or 8, I guess, yeah.
Hey, Google, what's 50 divided by 7?
The answer is approximately 7.143.
Okay, did you hear that?
Yeah.
7.143. Thanks, Google. So, all right, so maybe they have to give about 7 years of their life. Save Jean, probably well worth it. You know, those last 7 years of anyone's life, if you live into senior age, not the best, presumably. Although, who knows, like, in the distant future, it could be a big sacrifice.
All right, we've gone down a road here.
Right, this is stupid.
Let's bring it back.
Fine, you're right. So the X-Men, they all join their hands, much like in many things we've seen, like Guardians of the Galaxy, like the hand-holding scene of life, right? You know.
Yeah.
And then the Phoenix departs, Jean is saved, the X-Men are transported home magically from the moon back into the mansion. Lalandra leaves, and Professor X is sad. He's like, Lalandra, there's a part of your mind that's now closed off to me. You've never done this before. And she's like, well, as Empress, there'll always be a part of me that's alone, Professor X.
And which doesn't make sense, because he just said this has never happened before, and she's saying it's always been and going to be like this.
Right,
so,
yeah, I know.
Whatever.
So much again for their bond deeper than love.
Also, why does she call herself Empress and everyone else calls her Magistrix?
I mean, like you said, they just interchange, you know. She's super powerful. It's like, when you're that powerful, people call you Your Royal Highness, Your Majesty, you know, Your Greatness, Your Dudeness, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So, you know, their romance, night's not so fulfilling. Will we see Lalandra again? I'm not sure. I don't remember. in the comics, you sure do. So she's off in the distance. And then Cyclops puts Jean to bed. She falls asleep. She's had quite the adventure in the past few months.
He pulls up a chair to sit next to her while she's sleeping.
In his sweaty spandex.
Just hanging out in spandex.
Right, yeah. He's still covered in moon dust, presumably. And, you know, that he probably doesn't smell that good.
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't care. He's not going to change. That's how Jean likes him anyway. She lovingly calls him Cyclops, not Scott so much. So she likes him as the action figure, not as the man, Scott Summers. Scott Summers, did I say? Scott Summers. So, yeah, so he's just going to – he can't even sleep. He's just going to sit by her side. Mm-hmm. So, but a happy ending,
and
though.
And that's where we leave them.
Yeah. And, you know, in the comics, it's much more tragic. Jean dies, and that's that.
Yeah.
Well, not really.
I mean, everyone can always come back to life in the comics.
And she does at some point. Very, very controversially, because Chris Claremont was not happy that they brought Jean back to life for X-Factor.
Yeah.
It turned out, you know, there's like the Phoenix made a double of Jean's body and like buried it in the ocean or something, and that the Jean we saw was some like clone, and then there's another clone of Jean like called Madeline Pryor that Scott dates and marries, and then he abandons her or something. It's like all totally insane. And then you know, and then Jean dies again as the Phoenix, and then according to the news comics, she's been reborn again. And then there's also a younger version of Jean Grey from the past that gets sent to the future, and she also has to deal with being the Phoenix. It's totally insane. This show makes things a lot simpler and easier.
Yes.
So, an excellent ending to the Dark Phoenix saga, I must say.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah. Any last thoughts on the Dark Phoenix saga here?
Nope, I'm going to miss that Phoenix.
There's still a lot more of season 3 to go, another like 5 or 6 episodes. This is the longest season of the show. And a lot of a lot of really good episodes yet to come too. I'm very excited to see. To state to fans, we've purposely not looked ahead just to try to stay as surprised as possible. You know, because it's best to keep all these memories of the show like jumbled and half forgotten so that when we see them, we're kind of surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the end of Dark Phoenix month. It's the start of a brand new year, 2018.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year again to everybody. I look forward to continuing the podcast with you, Sonia. We're going to do some more special episodes this year. It's not just going to be straight episodes of the show. We have some stuff planned. We just have to wait for the timing of special guests to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go back into our special episode moments at times with little to no warning. Unless you join the Facebook group known as the X-Men Task Podcast group. Search us out on Facebook. We're easy to find. Ask to join. You can join. It's really a great group. Lots of friendly, super happy people. I'd like to welcome our newest member, Mandy, who joined and is already sharing their special
lots of great stuff.
Great stuff. X-Men videos that they've created and all sorts of things. So welcome aboard, Mandy. Special shout out to all our fans, though. We love you all. You're very super nice. I love that the group, everyone's friendly and not no one's like being a troll and being stupid. And I like to think that's like a special tribute to I love doing the show because it's such a niche show for a niche audience. It's just like people in and around our age group for the most part that, you know, had the same life experiences, you know, and that get that why the show is worth yapping about all these years later. It's just a lot of fun. So, like, no one's, like, extra, you know, you're not getting, like lunatics who are fans, you know what I mean, that are, like, ready to, like, yell at people and argue and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, if we do have fans that are like that and that ends up happening, we'll see what happens, how we deal with them. But so far, everyone's been super nice and friendly and normal, so that's great. So join us on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter, at Woodley Simpson. Also follow X-Men Tass on Twitter. They are Eric and Julia Leewald, the show's writers. They also have the book Previously on X-Men. Check that out. It's really cool. Also, is that all our plugs typically?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah, that's all our plugs. Rate and review us on iTunes, give us 5 stars. That goes a long way to spreading the visibility of the show. So that's very exciting, too. And our show continues to be very strong. And again, we love you all.
Yeah.
So
thanks, everyone.
Yeah, so Happy New Year. That's all I have to say for this episode. Any last New Year wishes you'd like to send?
No, not really. You know what I realized? As soon as we were finished recording last week,
yeah,
for some reason, a y'all slipped into whatever I was saying goodbye. I was like, see y'all later or something. I was like, I'm not Southern in any way, and I'm not sure why that happened. So today, the proper Brooklyn send-off is see you guys later.
I can live with that. But you're not worried that Rogue has, like, subtly influenced you in some way? Like, do you strongly side with Rogue emotionally, or... you don't think it's a Rogue thing? It's just you were just a random y'all hiccup?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
All right, we'll see you all later from Brooklyn. We out.